This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Whatley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's the Legal Hour with our good friend Kevin Flesh, and our lines are open, 303-477-5600. You can check out Kevin's website at fleshlawfirm.com. And as I always tell you, put his number in your phone, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886. Kevin, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you, Scott?
I'm great. Great to see you.
Good to see you.
Well, Kevin, you had a great idea for a show today, so let's talk about it.
Yeah, so after the shooting last week, I've got teenage kids, and this really resonated with me about a topic that we should have that's, you know, we talk about personal injury, we talk about criminal defense matters on this show, and as you know, and many of the listeners know, we do a bunch of criminal defense work in our practice. And so I get to see some of the folks, not to the extreme that we had last week, but I get to see folks that do bad things to the public, and I deal with that on a regular basis in defending them, and think I have we do a good practice in that regard, and constitutionally we follow, you know, what our government and what our society is all about in the sense of giving people that sort of defense. But I thought it was also really important to have a conversation that sort of strips away some of the political structure that's going on,
that would
some
be nice.
Of the some of the discussion that's going on about things that I don't really think solve the problem and get to the heart of the matter, which is we've got to protect our kids better.
Right.
And how you do that.
Sure.
You know, and so we discussed that, and I went out and tried to find some folks that are there at the schools. Then the schools don't want to come in and talk right now about what they're doing to protect our kids. So, but we do have a guest today.
We do. And the minute you told me the topic and you said, hey, let's talk somebody. And I said, I got the guy. And that's Joe Dedon with TAC One Consulting. And Joe's been a friend of ours for a number of years. Had him on our show quite often there a few years back. But man, Joe's life got very busy in his work, and we got busy, but we're going to reestablish this relationship because Joe does a great job with TAC One Consulting. So, Joe, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you for having us. So, yeah, certainly a very timely discussion. And, Kevin, like you mentioned, you know, a lot of the school districts, you know, they don't want to talk about it, especially the major public school ones. But there are several options. We'll get into those today. And on the legality side, too, just, you know, that private citizen that's, you know, CCW holder, concealed, you know, carry permit holder, you know, what are their options in these type of deals and how they prepare themselves. So I'm excited.
Sure.
Yeah. And this isn't a show about, oh, we're going to limit access to guns. We're not going to talk about that because I think personally, and since we normally talk about legal stuff, I'm going to give you my personal opinion about that. The only way that works is you take all of the guns away from everyone. And that's never going to happen.
Right. That's the American Revolution.
Yeah,
too,
right. That's
Second
exactly what it is.
American Revolution, and that will never happen.
And it will never happen. And so I see it in my line of work. I had a case 2 months ago where I went to trial where there was somebody shot and there was a gun used and the gun was bought on the street. And it happens all the time. Bad guys get guns whenever they want them because they figure out sources where they can get them, where they don't have to do a background check and they don't have to go through the legal means of doing it. So we're not having that discussion today. Mm-hmm. We're having a discussion about there are other things that we can do to protect everyone in society, and how do we go about doing that and putting things in place so that that can happen, so that we don't have to worry about it in the future, right? I mean, it's still going to be attempted.
Right. Yeah, and that's a big thing is, you know, you're looking at, what, 19 years almost, you know, post-Columbine, so that new era of active shooter. You know, we used to call it going postal, but after Columbine, it was active shooter, active gunman, you know, active killer now. You know, a lot of that discussion is always getting rid of the guns. So, you know, it's an old school thought. Like I said, it's never going to happen. So, you know, let's move forward and be progressive and come up with real solutions, because that's not a real solution. It's easy to be emotional and talk about that, but they're part of our culture. They're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so we need to find ways around it. The biggest thing is it's about, we'll be just knowledge and, you know, educating people and providing all facets the knowledge. So the community, you know, after the Las Vegas shooting, you know, the community needs to know what to do in an open air environment. You know, you go down next time, you know, the Denver Broncos become great again and win the Super Bowl. You know, what do you have to think about? So the community needs to be involved a little bit more. I think now that's going to be a big push, just general situational awareness in any type of environment. And then you got your schools, obviously, and they've been, you know, progressing since April 21st, 1999, but there's still a lot of room there. Law enforcement's came a long way. Obviously, that's my background and very familiar with that. So, but they're still working hard at it. We can touch on all those things. And then just EMS, too. You know, they're usually the cleanup crew. We're still working on changing them after Aurora movie theater shooting. So, and even more into the school faculty realm and just the private citizens. So it used to be a law enforcement problem. You know, after April 21st, 1999, hey, how are you going to save us? To where we relied too heavily on law enforcement and then even school faculty. You know, so now it's got to become more of a community problem. And we'll touch on that, but there's several options and several issues that make common sense. They're easy to implement. It's just a matter of getting the politics out of the way and allowing school districts and educators and, you know, businesses in general just to make that decision for themselves.
Sure. So let's start out a little bit with your background. Mm-hmm. Again, you've been on with us before, but just to reset the format here, I want everybody to know we've got an expert here. So tell us about your background.
Yeah, real quick, I worked from Jefferson County Sheriff's Office from 2002 to 2010. So obviously I wasn't at Columbine, but I was at the two other shootings we had, Platte Canyon High School and then Deer Creek Middle School shortly before I left. And my time there was on their SWAT team, field training instructor. I got real heavily into the active shooter side when I came on. And in Colorado, we were still progressing, you know, as a state and also the Midwest as a region at that point, 3 years after Columbine, on how do we update law enforcement tactics. So some of my very best friends, you know, were first responders and actually people inside that building. You know, you talk a lot of cops in the metro area at the time. They all say they were there, but there was very few intimate group of people actually inside with the hands, getting their hands dirty inside that school. And then I started TAC 1 in 2007, primarily just offering active shooter training for small rural communities. And that's what I want to talk a little bit about today, because we've had aggressive programs for rural community educators, rural community law enforcement, and EMS for roughly about 2009, 2010. We've made common sense, curriculum, you know, that made sense, that supported the rural environments because they have no help. They're always up to say, hey, what do we need to do to prepare our people the best we can with the limited amount of resources, you know, prolonged response to law enforcement. So we've had those. And now the metro areas are finally jumping on board because they realize, hey, you can have cops everywhere. You can have, 10,000 teachers to a school district. But now we need some, you know, additional training and some quick thinking. So anyway, since 2007, been in 42 states. We have anything from our single officer active shooter response to 40-hour custom SWAT schools for major large teams. But it spilled over into the, you know, civilian side with our concealed weapon classes, our active shooter classes, and, you know, into the school faculty and workplace programs. You know, we've been busy the last 3 years, different kinds of organizations from oil and gas to the LGBTQ community, where prior to Orlando shooting, you know, you'd be amazed what kind of private sector clients are calling us now. Because it's getting on their radar as far as an HR need or risk management. It's a, you know, give their employees a little bit of knowledge.
Right. And churches. I mean, good night. Church shootings.
Right.
Same thing.
Yeah, it's huge. I think there are so many churches, even in the metro area, that are probably doing very little in the way of preparing for an active shooter scenario.
Yeah, there's a few. You know, they all have security teams, and that's another thing. They have volunteers. They have, you know, retired cops, things like that. But if you're going to have a team and you're going to promote that and give them radios and put them on a list of responders, there's got to be some formal training there. You got to look at the liability side, to where if you look like a duck, act like a duck, walk like a duck, well, you should be trained properly like a duck. So a lot of your CCW classes, you know, I could take a CCW class for 3 hours at Cabela's and not shoot a firearm. But, you know, those don't properly prepare people. So if you're going to have a security team in place without getting into hours and hours of conversation, think of, you know, supporting them with the proper training that mimics what we give law enforcement, and adequate. So if something does happen on your facility, it's not just a group of people who want to be volunteers doing something. Then you can back that with training, curriculum, documented hours to minimize that risk. No one thinks of that, you know. But if something were to happen at some of these large facilities, lawsuits are going to fly. Sure. And I guarantee they'll fly from the people coming to those facilities.
Absolutely.
Everybody wants dollars, yep. You know, so.
No, there's absolutely that aspect of it as well. I think the thing that you really bring to the table as well is relating to the training and the necessity of the individual who takes on this responsibility of what it is that they have to do. And that's one of the other discussions we have to have today, because we're not, you're certainly not advocating, and I'm not advocating, suggesting that every teacher that goes into Columbine High School tomorrow has a handgun that's right. strapped to their side. That's not what we're talking about.
Right.
What you're talking about, and I think what the real solution is being diligent in making sure that those facilities have individuals who have been willing to volunteer, and then they've gone through not just training, but regular practice mm-hmm. of active shooter sort of scenarios, so that they understand and they've been there in the sense of their mind and mechanical body movements, so that they understand what to do.
Right, and that's the huge thing. With just a little bit of training, that knowledge goes a long way. So, you know, it's something that, you know, State of Colorado pushed out the program, and it's roughly about 24 hours of required training to where superintendents can arm their staff. Now, I think 24 hours is not adequate enough, but...
Oh, hold on. You mean we have a law in place that Colorado can...
Yeah, we do, but you know those metro area large school districts that we can all think of off the top of our head, are it's too big of a piece for them to chew, to bite off, and they don't want the liability. But yeah, that's available to them. You know, that's why you see it, what I call in the cow towns, you know, the outskirts.
Yeah.
They're some of our best clients, because they understand the need, and their first sheriff's deputy might be 35 minutes away. So they've been on board since day one. But you come here to the metro area, it ain't going to happen.
So what communities out in the rural part of Colorado have done these sorts of things?
You know, I don't like to kind of... Okay,
sorry. Yeah, good
but
point.
But if you could just think of 30 minutes outside of Denver... it's very easy for a superintendent to get with this, a sheriff and sign off on that program and put together, and they know how to contact us. We're on a list for, you know, training providers as far as the state of Colorado and also insurance companies, you know, because of the documented training hours.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not very far out of the – you drive 30 minutes outside of Denver, there's a lot of them. There's a lot less politics, and they're a little bit more Second Amendment friendly, obviously. But its harsh reality is – they know they're by themselves for a long amount of time.
But that's the other thing, is that they've already recognized, the ones that have are really, I'll call them reasonable in the sense of they're trying to protect what's going on and knowing that they could be the next victim of this sort of thing.
Right.
And they're doing what they need to do to make sure that they have folks on the ground today that have gone through. And there's a law in place that's already allowed this to occur.
Right. And it's very, you know, the initial expense is just mainly providing firearms, you know, firearms for them, ammunition, and just our training. Yeah. So it's a lot cheaper than hiring one security guard that's probably even going to be unarmed for the year, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a program that they can implement very quickly and just get a few people on the campus that are willing to do it. And it's cost effective, you know. It's not expensive at all, really. It's just getting them to entertain the idea and back it with the training and the firearms.
All right. Again, Joe Dedon is our guest. This is the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch as well. And our lines are open, 303-477-5600. If you've got any questions or comments for Joe or Kevin, we will take your calls. As we mentioned, it's TAC 1 Consulting. And if you're interested in a class with Joe, maybe you own a business and you would like to talk with Joe about coming out and doing some work with you there. Hey, it's a free consultation, I assume, Joe, for you to come out and at least talk with them. So 720-425-5687, 720-425-5687. And you can check out their website at TAC1Consulting.com. When we come back from a break, we're going to talk a lot about this today. And then, you know, what are some of the trends that are going on that maybe Joe is seeing with some of these shooters that are going on? And then what are these first steps that we should be taking? You know, the term assault weapon is flying everywhere. And everybody pictures just that AR-type rifle, right. Kevin and Joe, you know. And we're going to talk about that. What is an assault weapon? We'll be right back.
Tired of being forgotten, disrespected, and not listened to when applying for a mortgage? Do you always get someone new when checking your loan status? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. We have been serving Colorado since 2001. We are closing loans in 13 to 15 days. We offer paperless applications, ability to view your loan status 24/7, loans designed to fit your needs, not the bank's, with customized terms, whether purchase or refinance, all at low rates. Take AIM for quick pre-approvals, cash out to pay off high credit card debt, and see how hundreds of our clients are saving thousands in excess interest and payments, all while owning their home faster. Find out how. Call now, 720-895-0500, and talk to your personalized mortgage professional from start to finish. 720-895-0500. That's 720-895-0500, where it is all about you. Regulated by DOR, NMLS 298-191, Equal Credit Lender.
Littleton Heating and Air Conditioning is proud of their 45 years of HVAC service to Littleton, Highlands Ranch, and Denver metro area. Littleton Heating and Air Conditioning is your Lennox and Carrier expert heating and air conditioning contractor. They are proud to offer the finest heating, air conditioning, and indoor air quality products with prompt and professional customer service and satisfaction. Call today and mention Haystack Help Radio and save $25 off any repairs or $100 off your furnace installation. Call 303-798-3880. That's 303-798-3880 for your appointment today. Littleton Heating and Air, A-plus members of the Better Business Bureau and official Haystack Help registered company.
Ladies, I know you're tired of walking into the local gun store and seeing the same old thing. So let me tell you about Rampart Firearms. Just a quarter mile up Highway 67 off of Santa Fe and Sedalia, you will find a great selection of guns, ammo, tactical, and personal defense weapons. And if you or your spouse love to hunt, Rampart Firearms is a great stop for all of your hunting needs. Shotguns, rifles, pistols, anything from predator hunting to your next big game trip. Head to Rampart Firearms at the foot of the Rockies. Open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And you will only pay a 4% tax on your purchase. RampartFirearms.com, 720-468-0050. That's 720-468-0050.
Rush to Reason with John Rush. Weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. It's the Legal Hour. Kevin Flesh is in studio, and also our special guest, Joe Dedon with TAC One Consulting. Again, Joe's number, 720-425-5687. Now, before we get out of here today, we will talk about some CCW classes that Joe offers. But again, if you're a business owner out there, maybe a church, whatever, you looking for some help with this, we highly recommend and endorse Joe. Very, very highly. Good guy, and I promise you we'll get the job done for you. 720-425-5687. Before the break, I mentioned assault weapon. Man, it's amazing, that term and how it's getting used. And so, Joe, we'll go to you, the expert here. What do you, when people talk about assault weapons, what are they talking about?
Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing is, AR-15, right? So you got the AR. So obviously a lot of people think that stands for, you know, assault rifle or automatic rifle. Well, it's basically an Armalite rifle, right? They were the first manufacturers, and that was their brand was Armalite rifles. So there's a first thing there is everybody talks about those. So I like to just, you know, clear up what the AR actually stands for. But yeah, an assault rifle, you know, anything could be an assault. It could have an assault knife. You could have an assault pistol. The big thing for me is, yeah, does it look intimidating? Does it look militaristic? Sure. But there's plenty of other rifles out there, semi-automatic rifles that are, you know, that could be used for the same purpose. You look at a Ruger Mini 14. Mm-hmm. Looks exactly, it does the exact same thing. Just looks, doesn't look as aggressive, doesn't have all the new fancy rails and everything. You know, it's just, it's, here's the thing. I would honestly, and we might get some flack here from, you know, and the only people I'll get flack from are, you know, people who think they're the only truly highly, what I call secret squirrels, highly trained, you know, maybe ex law enforcement, ex, you know, military that thinks they're the only ones that can help in a situation like this. I would put a decently trained school staff member, CCW holder that actually takes real training and doesn't have to be a lot of it. I would put them up against somebody who is committing a mass shooting any day with, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, I would say SIG P238 if they had the actual training to be effective.
Right.
All day long. You know, we think about law enforcement at this point in my career. I would intervene unarmed, and I think I'd be pretty successful. So if you just put, you know, even those odds, put a firearm in somebody's hands that has adequate training, and we talk about not going on a death mission and a suicide mission, but being effective, maybe pinning that person down, interdicting is what we call it, and then interrupting, but interrupting their behavior and getting other people with better weapons, bigger weapons, more ammunition, training on site, you're effectively saving lives. So, I mean, I'd go as far as to say I would put somebody with a SIG P238 up against a shooter with an AR all day long. Now, when you get to multiple shooters and some other things, that's going to be another issue, but certainly more effective than no one on campus without anything, you know, to fight back with. So
sure.
And I think the emotional aspect of a lot of the people in the public is they look at this problem and they look at it and they don't know how to solve it. So they grapple with an idea of anything that will solve it. And the easy one is the gun debate,
right?
But realistically, what you do is give people options of what they can do, both in the sense of communities,
right?
You know, schools and their own leadership there and figuring out what they can do, but also just members of the community and saying why you don't have to be the next victim necessarily.
Right.
That if something does happen to you, get the training so that you understand when you get into that situation what you can do to remedy it. And we were talking off air about the concealed carry holder and people worried about the legal aspect of it. We'll talk about that. But in essence, in these sorts of situations where there's deadly force going on, I can tell folks that you have a CCW and you're protecting someone and someone is shooting at you, you have every right to use lethal force back. So the likelihood of you ever having any real legal problems is fairly minimal. And that's why you have to be, when you get that CCW, you know, you get that license, you have to be willing to get into that fray.
Right.
And because if you're not, then you don't want to do it.
Right.
Because there really is no reason to have it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And that's what we get a lot from like the CCW holders that take other types of training and they come to us for more of the advanced steps. We talked about it, you know, that first class should be just the first step. So, you know, we get that all the time is, well, if I go on the offensive, if I'm the aggressor in this situation, I actually go hunt or try to interdict, you know, not just defend an area. Let's say I'm single, ready to mingle, and I got some training. Well, you know, I would love to stop a mass shooting at a movie theater or a school and save lives. So, you know, there might be an opportunity for me to protect coworkers and other people, evacuate with my firearm because I got different priorities. But if I'm there and I have a little bit of training, I feel like I can make a difference, and why not? The big failure or the big shortfall in just the CCW classes, I mean, we can only touch on so much, even in ours. You know, it's primarily for that one-on-one altercation on the street, around your home, you know, to and from work, but not exactly whipping my pistol out in the, you know, North Glen, Thornton area Walmart to try to stop a shooter. So people are hesitant because we just go over the individual, maybe your family, you know, a robbery gone bad off of Spear and Colfax at night, or, you know, so we don't prepare them for that public environment where there's 100 people, maybe 200, maybe 50. So there's that hesitation. But we even have, I mean, you know, we're talking about just the CCW and the active shooter for the armed response, but we even officer, like the big thing about talking about educating the community is the unarmed response too. We have several programs. We've had it since 2010 after I went to Deer Creek Middle School, saw what Dr. Benke did there. It's called the Beyond the Lockdown, but it empowers even unarmed people. And that's the thing is if you can start educating the public on what they can do prior to law enforcement or prior to that first person that has an opportunity with a firearm, whether it's armed security, law enforcement, or the CCW holder, what do they do in the first 2 minutes? And that's what we need to get, because what they do in the first 2 minutes, their unarmed response of, you know, evacuating, barricading, and fighting back, that sets the tone later on, and it gets people off the X. So, you know, if we can get 90% of the people being aggressive, making up whatever decision they're capable of doing for that particular environment they're in, then it will help the CCW holder. It will help the security officer who's armed. It will help the first plainclothes cop on his day off, or the first uniformed dispatch cop on scene. It's a better outcome for everybody.
Right.
And that's the thing. You know, it doesn't even have to be an armed response. It just has to be knowing the general public, knowing what are my options here based on where I'm at, what type of building, what type of event, who's with me, what do I think is going on, and how to properly analyze that, though. You know, again, I don't want the guy with the SIG 238 just pulling out his pistol running down the hall.
Right.
He's going to get mowed down,
yeah,
just like the rest of them.
Right.
But if he had a little bit of wits about him, took 5 seconds to kind of, you know, survey and think, what are my options here? Where's the shooting coming from? Using a little bit of our tactics that we teach realistically when we do our civilian law, our active shooter response, the armed stuff, or the school security that's armed, it's mimics what we teach the first cop rolling and seeing to a large environment where they can, you know, shooters can move around. They might be heavily outgunned down long hallways. It's very similar to that. So just a little bit of knowledge on how to analyze what are my options here, you can be super effective. So,
Joe Dedon is our guest again with TAC 1 Consulting. Our lines are open. If you've got any questions or comments, 303-477-5600. So, Joe, when you go to these schools, you know, around the country, and you first get in there, are you finding now with most of the teachers and staff, it's a pretty warm reception because, like,
yeah,
man,
oh, it is.
We're helpless here.
Right.
We went out to Newtown, or area, Rhode Island, actually, after Newtown. We had this scheduled, though, in the fall. The Newtown was obviously in December of 2012. So we went out in March, but we were doing a law enforcement program for, you know, the active shooter, and as well as a school faculty. So it was already in the books. Well, when we went out there in March, I found a lot of putters, you know, inside classrooms. I don't think every teacher was a golfer, right?
No drivers, huh? Right. Just putters.
Just putters, because, yeah, you know, I couldn't do a baseball bat, can't do a bar, a little more of an aggressive weapon. You know, it looks like a weapon, baseball bat. So there was putters. And I started thinking, like, why is there a putter by every door? Well, you know how exposed those teachers must have felt being, you know, 20 miles away from Newtown.
Yep.
And you feel it. But so now they are. We get to have this conversation. When we actually talk to the teachers, they're up for it. And again, it's based on school district size, political climate in the area. I can go to Wyoming, Idaho, Utah, some parts of New Mexico, Arizona, and everybody's on board. And with the aggressive response for the school faculty, to a point. Charter schools all day long, private schools, yes. Public school districts that are large, not necessarily. It wasn't until, you know, about 2 years ago, what they call the safety response protocol. And we'll talk about it, Kevin, when you do get people... school districts talking about it, they use the same buzzwords. Yes, we conduct regular training. Yes, we work well with law enforcement 3 times a year. They're in our building running exercises, you know, for the whole SWAT team on the summer. Well, that's fine. But what they don't tell you is what exactly are they doing for the teacher inside that classroom. You know, they use the buzzwords. Yeah, we're prepared. Yeah, we have a plan in place. Yeah, I'm sure they do. They got policy in place. They got,
right,
you know, training. Could have been a 30-minute training online.
Yeah.
And they do try to work regularly with law enforcement. But that's great. That sounds good. But it really wasn't until a couple years ago, even our own state, you know, that safety or standard response protocol they passed, all that did was require them to have annual training and have a plan in place. And that plan at the time, even as legislation got written into it, it was only the whole barricade stuff we've had since April 21st, 1999. It's not okay anymore. That's not just enough. I don't rely on a $60 lock from Lowe's to save my students. They're just now finally advocating evacuating or barricading. We've been pushing that since 2010 into 11 with our school faculty, with an addition of firearms knowledge so that we can empower them to make correct decisions and not run to their death. You know, like Dave Sanders, you know, unfortunately in Columbine, got shot running up the stairs. We give them some more options. So, you know, they'll use the buzzwords, but even in the state of Colorado, how many school shootings have we had? And we still don't empower our teachers to fight back if needed. Because if I'm going to build a standard response protocol, it's got to work for, you know, it's got to work for Fort Morgan or Morgan County, yep, school districts. It's got to work for Denver DPS. So if I'm going to enact legislation, it's got to be watered down to the most politically charged, maybe non-aggressive school district,
right?
For them to sign off on it.
Yep.
So it's not going to be the best plan.
Right.
It's just the way it is. So, you know, they're doing the evacuating, barricading. And they, like I said, they just came on board because they're catching flack. Hey, this is an outdated, you know, response. Like, get aggressive here. But they're still not advocating, you know, to teachers or even the school kids to fight back if they can.
Right.
But certainly within the state of Colorado, we talked about the standard response protocol, and that's by state law. But these individual, I mean, all of the school districts have their own school boards. So they could enact whatever they wanted to protect our kids. And what you're saying is that right now, that politically, some of those school districts aren't doing it. They're saying the right things, but they're not. So if a parent of a student would go to that school district and say, okay, I hear what you're saying, but what are you doing?
Right.
That's the important.
Yes, they need to ask the bottom line, the root thing is, what are you doing to empower that school faculty member, where it's the teacher or the coach who runs out to his death,
right,
in Florida trying to save the day? What type of training are you providing them, and how aggressive are you allowing them to be? And you know, versus policy and backed by training. So that's what you need to ask, because they'll give you, and I'm sure I'll get some emails here later from some of my friends at the school districts, like their PIO people, because they always tell me I ruffle feathers and I start conversations they don't want to have.
Because they're really good conversations to have.
Because a normal parent, they'll take that and they don't read into it. They're like, okay, great, that sounds awesome. I can pick that apart in 30 seconds.
Right.
And you know, I've done that over emails. People have asked me, hey, this is what my principal at my kid's school said they're doing. And then what I'll do is I'll say, hey, write back this and ask this question. Then it gets pretty heated because they're like, whoa, what kind of question is this? I can't answer that, because they're going to see a gap in that.
Right.
You know, so they'll do it. They'll use the buzzwords. But for the most part, we're still behind the curve, which is unfortunate.
So for educational purposes, of those for those folks that are interested in having that conversation with the leadership of these schools, how can they know what to ask?
Yeah, where it is, it's like that, ground zero. So how aggressive are you allowing or training your school staff members, that individual teacher, that coach, that facilities manager that's mobile on the campus? How aggressive are you allowing them to be in their response? Are you advocating a run, which is we want everybody off the X? Are you advocating barricade doors? Now, if that doesn't work, are you giving them a little bit of knowledge to fight back if they have to choose so? Arm themselves with this. Two or three staff members do this. And also, even some of the kids. And, you know, you talk about it, and, you know, a high school-aged kid with a little bit of knowledge, I saw this poor girl that was being interviewed on Skype, you know, the night of the shooting. They didn't have a chance to barricade the door. I don't even know if that Florida school district's advocating barricading the door. I'd have to do some research, but they locked the door. They hid in the corner like usual. He busted through because they have the glass, half glass doors, you know, right. Bust through the glass, hit the latch, came in, killed four people right in front of her.
Yeah.
Now, if it's never implanted in somebody's head, especially high school age students, hey, if we've done everything we can, at least your teacher has an option to fight back. And you know, you're 15 to 17 years old, 14, you're strong enough to fight back as well. You're a young adult. We trust you to drive. You know, some of those kids can join the military at 17, 18.
Right.
So here's what we do. We put them inside the schools, and then we don't let them act on their own either. But if they never give the kids an option, look at Virginia Tech. That was, you know, a lot of kids that were 6 years old or like sixth grade when we came up with barricading shelter in place, right? Virginia Tech gets shot up. There's only one room that barricaded and fought back because they were indoctrinated for, 7 years in public school systems with the regular lockdown drill, just hide under desk and lock the door. If we don't give them an option, say, hey, tough topic, but if they come in here, you know, somebody do something. One or two bullets to somebody is better than 35 in this room.
Yep.
And what they look at is they work at liability to empower their teachers. Guess what? Lawsuits are going to fly anyway. We just talked about it. Kevin, you know that?
Absolutely, I do.
No matter what we do, everybody's going to get sued. School district, law enforcement, EMS, everybody. Gun manufacturers at some point. We're not going to be able to get there quick enough. So let's stop worrying about, they're worried about liability on the other end. You know, as far as, oh, well, if a teacher gets hurt or a kid gets hurt with a bullet to his arm instead of, you know, one dead center in the chest or his head. You know, we're going to pay out money anyway, so let's not count dollar signs. Let's try to save lives, and right. Because we're going to be shelling out money anyway.
Let's just minimize the amount of claimants.
Minimize the amount of claimants and minimize the impact and stop the loss of life instead of worrying about, you know the $1 million lawsuit when a teacher disarms a kid and gets shot in the leg.
Yeah.
We got to take a short break.
Sure, let's do that.
You're listening to Haystack Help Radio. Kevin Flesch, Joe D. Don in studio. 303-477-5600 is our number. We'll be right back.
What could you do with an extra $500, $1,000, or even $1,500 per month? How would that change things for you? Would you buy a new car, pay off bills, or just feel a bit more secure about your retirement? What if I told you there's a way to make your dreams a reality? I'm talking about trading and investing in the market. Now, before you say, oh, that's not for me, just hear me out. I want to invite you to a half-day trading course so you can check this out. I promise you, you'll go away smarter than when you came in. We here at Online Trading Academy sponsor this, and we'll even send you home with a free home study video guide. Your money's doing nothing for you in a CD or mutual fund. Learn how to profit when the market's up or down. Call us now while seats are still available at 303-325-2776. Use offer code RADIO50. 303-325-2776. That's 303-325-2776.
I was hurt in a car accident. The bills were piling up and my insurance company was giving me the runaround. I didn't know what to do, but then I called a lawyer I saw on TV. That lawyer had all the tools and the knowledge to get me $1.2 million.
Whoa. When you're hurt in an accident, you need Kevin Flesch of Flesch Law, a lawyer that's going to take your case seriously and not treat you like some get-rich-quick scheme. Serious car accidents are traumatic and can completely disrupt your life. Kevin Flesch has the integrity to help you get your life back on track. He will fight for you to get what you deserve, but he won't treat you like a lottery ticket. After you've been in an accident, call Kevin Flesch of Flesch Law at 303-808-8886 and make sure you will get someone who will do the right thing and get your life back.
If you're looking for great deals on outdoor equipment and clothing, we've got you covered. Hi, this is Bill Paddock, owner of the Outdoorsman's Attic, your outdoor gear consignment headquarters. You'll save 20, 30, 40, even 50% on previously owned outdoor gear for the fisherman, hunter, and camper. We also sell live bait, firearms, and ammo. If you're doing a little spring cleaning, bring in your gear to the Outdoorsman's Attic. We'll sell it for you and put cash in your pocket. You can also pick up your hunting and fishing licenses right here at the store. Your one-stop shop for all your outdoor gear needs is the Outdoorsman's Attic, located at 2650 West Hampton Avenue in Sheridan, Colorado. 303-781-3626. That's 303-781-3626. Or visit us online at outdoorsmansattic.com. Mention Sportsman's of Colorado and receive 20% off all your outdoor clothing.
Denver's Afternoon Rush. Rush to Reason is coming up at 3. Now, back to Haystack Help Radio.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. It's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesh, and we have a special guest in studio with us, a good friend of ours, Joe Dedon with TAC One Consulting. Once again, if you're just turning on your radio, Joe's with TAC One Consulting, and you can check out their website. He also offers a lot of classes around CCW. And again, if you're a business out there, church, school, whatever, if you're interested in talking with Joe about all the different services they have to offer, you can reach him at 720-425-5687.
So, Scott, just before the break, we were talking about kids, and I think, Joe, while we were talking, we're having such good conversations while the commercials are going on about, you know, our kids. And you talked about briefly about the fact that the kids have things they can do, and we need to do a better job of really teaching them in this situation, not to necessarily rely on the adults. I mean, there's certainly going to be times where you're going to want adult supervision, but if they had a little bit of training, talk to us about things, just some examples of things that you've done in these rural communities and other places where the kids are involved in this so that they feel empowered to do something in these active shooter situations.
Right. So you'll be amazed, just, you know, from middle school up, you go and you start talking to these kids about what an active shooter is, and they know a lot. Like, yeah, somebody's going to come here and shoot us all. And they kind of laugh. They don't understand it's serious.
Yeah.
You know, they play video games. They see it on, you know, in movies. So they know. I mean, it's no secret. You know, they know they could be targeted. They know it could be a fellow classmate, you know, or a complete stranger. So trust me, our youth, you know, they're kind of ready for this conversation because they do all these drills. It's not a secret to them. That's, you know, and if done the right way, with some of our rural clients, we've had pilot programs in their schools to test it out. And this has been for several years. Because we always try to kind of stay ahead of the curve where, yeah, we're empowering the staff now, but hey, you know, they're so rural, they might not have a cop for 45 minutes, and that's on a good day.
Yeah.
So they've picked, you know, some of the kids that, you know, maybe staff member kids that get good grades, they're kind of leaders, you know, within their different age groups. And they've put them through our training, and we water it down just a little bit as far as, you know, so we don't stress them out or make it too intense, but... You know, there's things they can do. They can, you know, middle school aged kids, they can help barricade doors. If you look at this shooting, you know, where it started in the hall, because the guy had a fairly decent plan to get everybody out in the halls. So most likely thinking that they're, you know, well, there's a big funnel right there, but also not able to barricade and things like that. You know, they can help barricade the teacher. They can help grab desks. You know, they can help barricade in those 3-4 seconds that they have to not rely on the lock. Then they can also help the staff member, you know, if they do decide to fight back, you know, just be an extra set of some more weight. So we don't advocate trying to teach somebody to be, you know, Gerard Butler, Liam Neeson, you know, an expert mixed martial artist.
Sure.
So, but we're teaching gross motor skill, easy stuff that the teacher can see one time in their lifetime and probably be effective. So, you know, you're not going to, you know, so if they come through the door, barricade fails, or in the case of Florida, they didn't have a chance to barricade because he came into some of the rooms right away. You know, what can you do with this things around you? But the kids, they love it. And it's one of those things, high school age kids, they can certainly fight back. You know, if they had a little bit of knowledge and we implanted that in their head, say if you're directed by your teacher, you know, do something to help. And, you know, just as a teacher tries to disarm or tries to attack, then, you know, all they are is just an extra, some more weight. All we're trying to do is trap that firearm, get it offline, one or two shots. A lot of times there's malfunctions when we do these trainings because the slide's not functioning freely, whatever, but two or three shots into the ground or maybe in my left bicep or my foot is better than, you know, like I said, a room in Newtown where there's 12 kids shot over, you know, several hundred times in a closet. So... we can do that. And we were talking about a little bit about empowering our kids. So this is what I don't understand about the school districts and just society in general is, you know, since our little boys and girls are old enough to have adult conversations, start playing unsupervised, we tell them about stranger danger, you know, and then as our females become you know, the age where they can have an adult type conversation. We talk about sexual assault and sexual assault prevention, what to do. So we tell them to empower themselves with their personal safety when they're out and about. But then we put them inside a school and we say, leave that up to the professionals.
Right.
That makes no sense. So as a community, we need to start, you know, unfortunately, this is never going to stop. We know this. 19 years later, we talk. It's never going to stop. So another part of that whole educational piece, not just relying on law enforcement and EMS, is educating the public, and that goes to our kids, you know, as they start going, you know, they got some friends here that are listening from Las Vegas, but where, you know, you got the Vegas shooters takes the high ground. You know, everybody sees through the movies and what they're taught is, you know, hit the ground, bullets are flying. Well, and that doesn't work when obviously the shooter, unbeknownst to all those people in the crowd, was 32 stories up and 200 yards away. You know, we need to start educating the public, just, hey, just keep moving, whether it's your adversary or the shooter's on the same plane or they got the high ground. A moving target's better than a non-moving target, and it gets you off that X. So those are the things, unfortunately, that we're going to have to start talking to our kids. When they're out in public, hey, here's what you do if you hear shooting, you know?
Right.
And here's what you need to try to do. And that's the way our society's going, and it's becoming a huge issue. So it's going to be common. It should be commonplace. You know, as soon as they get old enough to know, hey, these bad people out there, things are going to happen. This is what you need to do to think quickly on your feet.
Right. So we got a Facebook message. Someone says, if the teachers are armed and shoot at a shooter, it will draw the shooter towards them instead of deterring them.
Well, so okay. All right. So if it's the teacher, you know, like obviously there's a couple of different things we teach in these classes. It's offensive and defensive. So am I in a defensive position where I'm just, securing a room or a hall? You know, I want to deny access to that shooter from my hall because I got 12 other classrooms down there. I could be pretty effective. He's not going to get down that one hall. I got 12 classrooms with, you know, maybe 300 kids in there. Then there's the offensive. So our whole thing on that is if they're getting attention to the shooter, then by effect they're saving lives, right? Because now that shooter's no longer just randomly shooting unarmed people, and it forced them to make a decision. And that's the biggest thing, is whether it's the unarmed response of locking the doors, fighting back, evacuating until they hit dry holes, or the armed response, which is the best option, it forced them to make decisions. Now they have to deal with that armed threat, and that's great. You know, if I can sit there and I can take the shooter's, you know, attention for a minute and a half, then, hey, guess what? Maybe Arvada PD is just ready to come in this building now. So, you know, it all adds up. And that's, and as far as that, I mean, that's ideally what you'd want, to be honest with you, to take that attention back and have them have to make those decisions, divide their attention and deal with that threat. Because they're going to have to make, they're going to have to make decisions too. And outside of some recent events, you know, a lot of times they're forced to make decisions. They take their own lives, and it forces them to think of, oh, whoops, now I got somebody here that I have to deal with. Focus their attention on them instead of our kids.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons that we're seeing it in the movie theater and the school scenario, is because these individuals know that they're not going to initially get that sort of response. So they're going to be able to create the most harm in the least amount of time, because they think that's probably the target that has the least amount of opportunity to respond to them.
You bet. And they're getting even faster. I mean, these recent ones are less than 2 minutes.
Right.
So they know that our response as law enforcement, we're going to get there quick. We're not going to wait for the SWAT team like we did at Columbine. Yep. 42 minutes later, you know, when my ex-coworkers, you know, breached the cafeteria and went through the front door. And we're not going to wait for the first four. That's what we used to teach. Not going to worry. We're sending the first cop in there. So they know that we're getting quicker and we're going to get in there. So they're a race against the clock.
Yep.
Hoping. And so everybody's a little bit of effort. That's the thing. Whether it's the evacuating the rooms, you know, whether it's barricading the door and slowing him down so he picks another room. And it's the unarmed, it's now the armed teacher or armed staff member now buying some time there.
And they won't know what they're going to get.
Right.
And so
exactly.
An individual who's in that scenario mm-hmm. is going to be concerned, and maybe they won't show up at that school.
Yeah.
And because they're going to be like, oh, well, this is what I've heard. And we have to be more public about what's being done, I think, too, so that these individuals realize, oh, that target isn't as soft as maybe it used to be.
I like those signs in Texas. They say, armed staff, if you come here to harm our kids, you'll be represented, or you'll be met with equal force.
Yeah.
You know, hey, you don't want to pick this school.
No, you don't.
Else. They don't go down recently, the ambush of police stations, but there's been a few. But typically, they don't go down to Denver PD District 5 and say, hey, boys and girls, let's roll. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been, Dallas PD actually had their one of their substations at night attack the guy in an armored vehicle, but that's a whole other issue. Right. But typically, they don't do that, you know, for a reason.
So how do we go about Kevin, you and you probably have met this where, you know, your girls like to hunt and everything,
yeah.
but a lot of their friends, oh, we could never shoot a gun.
Right.
We could never do this. So how do we get that translated for parents that are concerned about their kids' school? Instead of, you know, fighting for more gun control and trying to make calls to legislators about that, go to your schools, have this line of questioning that Joe has said and said, what are you doing for our kids? And yet make our kids understand that the guns aren't bad. But
well,
so many parents think
right.
the guns are the right. bad.
I think what people are looking for is they feel so helpless that they're glomming on to the first thing and the thing that they see first to resolve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just like most of life, the first thing isn't always and most likely not the answer. What you have to do is think about and be thoughtful about what we're really doing. And that's that's hard when you're in an emotional situation. And this is an extremely emotional topic,
sure.
right? So people, I bet we get right now half of the people that won't have the conversation because they
right.
just can't.
Yep.
And we've got to figure out a way to get to those half of those people that are parents to say, we get it. But we've got to do something so that our kids have tools to help themselves in the situation because we won't be there.
Right.
And law enforcement won't be there. Mm-hmm. And as you just said, 2 minutes can be the difference between the lives of 17 people
right.
or not.
Completely. 26, 32.
Right.
I mean, all that. So that's the thing is they're not willing to have the hard conversations. It's the easy knee-jerk, oh, we need to do this and this and guns are the problem. Again, they're not going anywhere. So we need to come back and say, that's not the solution. You're so highly enlightened about firearms and their problem, then let's come up with a better solution than that, bro. You know, so they won't have the hard ones, and it's, you know, it's the common sense approaches, these different things that we can do that it builds layers, you know, educating the community, act like it doesn't exist. A lot of people who don't like firearms, they won't even talk about them. That right. shouldn't be your plan for personal protection, whether it's inside a school, inside your home, wherever, you know, they're part of our society. So having that conversation about the multiple layers we can put in place that makes sense, you know, and just empowering our kids. Here's the thing. Kids police themselves, right? They used to, you know, if you had a bully or something like that, you know, you fought but now you get a misdemeanor and you go to jail and yeah. you get expelled from school. So you got all this pent up energy, especially with this shooter. He fit the mold. This is the first shooter in a while that fit the old mold we used to have after Columbine, you know, mid-20s or, you know, early to mid-20s, white male, recluse, super smart. You know, outcast, as people saw it coming, the way his behavior was, whatever. There's been a few that have been, you know, we had our first black active shooter, you know, Navy Shipyard. We had our first, you know, San Bernardino jihadis, Bonnie and Clyde. So it's been changing, you know, and obviously Vegas shooter, you know,
completely
a middle-aged
man.
Yeah, completely off the radar. So it's been changing, but he broke back to the mold where you have these issues and we're not letting our kids empower themselves to make decisions to defend themselves. You know, you see these kids get bullied, but no one beats up the bully. And I'm not advocating violence, but... when there's life at stake, we need to have that conversation with our kids and say, hey, you know what? You're a human being. You have the right to protect yourself. You have the right for self-defense as long as it is appropriate and what the normal person in that same situation would believe is necessary. Even you as a 15, 16, 17-year-old kid, we take that away from them because we want them to be correct. We give them all these anti-bullying classes in school. The educators get them. That's great. They're needed. But we don't also have that conversation of saying, hey, this is great, but sometimes words don't help. Words don't work. There might be a time where you got to defend yourself. So if there's a time to defend yourself, this is the way it is. But we don't take that from them. Like the older
right.
generations, you were able to do that. But we completely wipe that off the board because they don't want violence. Well, sometimes violence needs to be met with violence. And I hate to say that coined phrase that everybody talks about, but it's true.
And that's really what this debate gets down to.
Right.
Is that you can feel helpless
right.
and without answers and not educate yourself. And then have all kinds of political debates and these things still go on. Or you can say, oh, okay, you know what? I've got to figure out a way to yeah. resolve this in my backyard and help my family deal with these sorts of situations.
You know, and the biggest thing about that is the healthcare setting, right? We do a lot of stuff for hospitals and we've been doing them for a long time because they've had some pretty scary events unfold too over the years and they're very porous. You know, you got death and childbirth and the same things. You
sure.
got mental health wards and
right.
gangbangers that got shot by the other side and they're both there. So anyway, they've always been up on security, but... A lot of those, depending on where you go, the gun is, I mean, when you talk about active shooter, you have to touch on the political side of the firearms because people will shut you out. So if I go talk to a head nurse that's probably the most educated person in the area of 35 years at an upstate hospital in New York, she's never even seen a firearm before. So what we try to talk about and we try to sell it to people saying, hey, you are an educated person. You're in these positions for a reason. we all know that just ignoring something and ignorance is not an option for you. Regardless of how you feel about the Second Amendment, educate yourselves about them, because you're very smart people. You know that they could be used against you at some point in your life. So knowledge is power. That's how you've gotten this position. That's how you've gotten this job. That's how you've provided for your family. So just, I don't want to talk about them because they're scary and I don't agree with them. That shouldn't be an answer. Educate yourselves. It's like keeping your friends, your enemies closer than your friends, but that's how you get to them. They're thinking, you're right. A little bit of knowledge, a little bit of knowledge, depending on what I feel about these things, goes a long way.
Well, and I think the other conversation is you don't have to go out and shoot.
Right.
What we're talking about is doing things tactically.
Right.
Just so that you've got that in your mind.
In your mind.
Okay. I see this shooter coming this way, or the shooter's going that way. What are the things that I need to do to protect myself? And then help people get out of the situation.
And the big thing too, like the run, hide, fight videos. Everybody plays those. Like FEMA put those out again after Newtown and Aurora, before their plan in about 2014. After they, federal government's always a couple, years shy of a good idea,
right?
Or never have a good idea. So, it's one of those things where the run, hide, fight. That's their new thing now. They used to just do shelter in place. Okay, well, you're right. You got to have these tactical things in mind. Where, okay, how do I teach somebody how to run? Okay, Dave Sanders running upstairs, and he met his death at the top of the stairs. If we're going to teach and empower people and make these decisions, how do we effectively do that? So we do that. We teach them, okay, how to evacuate, how to analyze the situation, how to barricade correctly, which, that's another part, and then how to fight back. But then at what point, what option is good for me at that point, and can it change through these events? I might have had a shelter in place with a bunch of coworkers, and then if I can analyze the situation correctly, I might be able to get out in 30 seconds, because we're not just dealing with the lone shooter. Look what he did. Look what Cho did. Look what Harrison Klebold did. That was obviously a duel. San Bernardino duel shooter. We're preparing for the San Bernardino times four, to where if we can have a plan for the worst case scenario where we got four heavily armed gunmen come into a facility, then we can hopefully plan, for the single school shooter and make it a lot less minimal impact. So it's the education part, the tactical stuff that we teach, because knowledge is power. Just like Dr. Benke, right? Saw that bolt action rifle at Deer Creek. And you realize that he was in the middle of reload. We do some of these trainings where people they can't explain what a bolt action rifle looks like or what a pump shotgun. You got the 18-year-old kid armed with pepper spray at that private college in Washington a couple years ago. A guy brought a shotgun, pump, shot six people. He was in the middle of reload. You got to flip those over one shell at a time. He tackled him.
Yep.
Saw that. And it just, that's what I talk about. A little bit of knowledge is power. And that's what separates our program from the run, hide, fight. The missing link is where we've had our success, because we were ahead of the curve by several years. We've done this for 7 years for schools, is the firearm component. Every other major NASRO, NTOA, there's a bunch of different acronyms, in the school and cop world. They still don't have those in their programs, but I don't have their federal dollars and all their nonprofits backing me with my idea. I go out and it makes sense. If I'm going to empower somebody to deal with an active shooter, active killer, whatever the case may be, it's the United States. Let's just call it active shooter. It's going to be a gun. providing that extra piece of knowledge, if I'm going to tell you to prepare yourself and defend yourself up against that, I need to know what I'm up against at least. So I see some options. Or if I hear a long rifle, probably can't barricade or probably can't evacuate down this long haul. I need a shelter in place because, they can reach out and touch me.
Yeah.
Things like that. Or see a reload because they have malfunctioned in all these shootings.
Yeah, you think about it, all of us that have backgrounds in guns. A shooter that comes in with a handgun is going to be less effective, at 20 yards than, a long gun. So that's sort of, just those sorts of things. The majority of the population probably isn't aware of that.
Right.
But those sorts of things, people that would be aware of would be okay. It changes what I have to worry about.
Yes, and what are my options? Do I have any anymore? Or exactly. So a little bit of that knowledge goes a long way when you're trying to empower a facility with 300 people in it. But if we're not willing to have that conversation, then they're not going to have that knowledge and they're going to freeze. Right.
And then if you get half of those people to agree to go through some sort of training and they at least are all thinking the same thing at the same time, you've got so much better response than no one.
Completely.
Sure. Man, we're about out of time. We got about 2 minutes here, but Joe, I want to ask you this. From 5 years ago to CCW classes to today's CCW classes, who are you seeing come into those classes?
I call them mid-libs. That's my name for them. New people to Colorado, that maybe weren't gun-friendly before. You see a lot of people starting families, So we're at the first time, their personal protection with all the stuff, crazy stuff that's going on, robberies, playing Grand Theft Auto on TV. A carjacking suspect throws a lady out, along C-470, things like that. They're coming in saying, I want to at least protect my family. You know, so I kind of say mid-libs, where firearms wasn't an option, personal safety wasn't huge, but now that things are getting so crazy, they're coming in.
Right.
So I was talking to them about, you know, make sure they vote accordingly next time.
And I'm telling you, every one of us are guilty at this, of getting our permit and then not doing anything.
Right. Yes. Turn them in, people.
Without doing other more training.
Yes.
So you know what? I'm going to give a Joe. I want to do this active shooter thing.
Right.
You know what? I know I need. I mean, and you know, some people go, well, why do you have to have a gun? I have never come close to having to pull one. And
right.
That's my prayer and hope for the rest of my life, okay? We don't do this to be some kind of Wyatt Earp at a restaurant or whatever like that. It's just there for protection. But you know what? It doesn't help if you don't have that proper training. You got a plan in mind. All of these are different steps. And if we leave any of these steps out, we're
well, you become a liability, yeah. And that's the thing with just the active shooter response for concealed carry holders that we do. You know, because it cuts a little bit of flack from, like, 2% of the law enforcement community. It's probably lieutenants and sheriffs and police chiefs and above in some areas. You got your county mounty sheriffs. They're like, Joe, come on down. Let's offer this for my CCW holders that I issue the permits to.
Right.
But, you know, it's you become a liability. If you don't have the right type of stuff to pull your pistol out in that heavily populated environment, you do. But with a little bit of training, they're going to do it anyway. People are carrying their concealed weapons out in public anyway, right? Not just to protect themselves, but to stop these shootings. So with just a little bit of training, you can minimize those risks, make sure they're not going to get shot by their CCW holder, not get shot by the off-duty Thornton cop, or shoot the off-duty Thornton cop who looks like a shooter as well, you know, because they're just coming around the corner all stressed out, or the first armed security guard with 16 hours of firearms training with his old 38 revolver coming around the corner, he's going to shoot you in the back too. So what we try to do is educate. You know, people are like, oh, leave it to the professionals. Well, that's a very small community of the professionals that believe that way. It's the people you don't want to barbecue with, people that would write their grandma a ticket for not using a seatbelt. You know, but the people, the legitimate people in law enforcement, the people that do have families that know how important it is, they'll support it all day long. Yeah, you know what? I'd rather have CCWs trained because they're out anyway. I don't want to get shot as the first, you know, Westminster cop showing
right.
up. I don't want to have some guy that's so afraid, whipped his pistol out after a 3-hour class at Starbucks and draw down on me trying to do the right thing. Now we got, you know, good guy and good guy situation.
Right, right. So, you don't want that. No.
Guys, it's been great. We're going to do this again. Joe Dedon, TAC1 Consulting, 720-425-5687, 720-425-5687. Kevin, thank you.
Thank
you. Kevin's number, 303-806-8886. Get some training. Get your permit. This is Haystack Help Radio.